In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies. It is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, a UFO researcher and author assesses the current state of ufology and offers up some possible explanations for the UFO ET phenomenon.
My late friend Mac Tonies, who wrote a book called The Crypto-Terrestrials, his idea was that there was some race that had been here as long as we had, or maybe longer, and had developed parallel to us and then into a different direction, and was basically hiding from us now because they don't want anything to do with us. And to me, that's a good, viable theory. I don't really know how you test it.
This podcast is brought to you by BrightBiz. If you own a business or you've dreamed of starting one, there's a helpful free guide with 36 business power tools proven to boost sales, increase income, simplify your life, and give you better results with less effort. Best of all, this business toolbox is yours absolutely free. And these are useful online tools that make doing almost anything a lot easier. Just visit freebusinesstoolbox.com to grab your copy. I know there are a lot of websites out there that offer a special deal on something, but then they stick you in some recurring program. Sound familiar? But this isn't like that. There's no hidden thing to try. BrightBiz is giving away this guide free of charge as a means of putting their best foot forward. But all good things must come to an end, so don't wait. Grab your free guide today. Visit freebusinesstoolbox.com. Freebusinesstoolbox.com. That's freebusinesstoolbox.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality.
coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Hey, welcome to your Wednesday. I think it was comedian Dane Cook who had this great line, when people refer to back in the day, it was a Wednesday. Just a little fun fact for you. So one day when somebody actually says, oh, back in the day, they were talking about today, Wednesday. So enjoy it. It was back in March, it might have been a Wednesday, and it was the third time in 3 months where a declassified Defense Department video showed U.S. Navy F-18 fighters seemingly encountering UFOs. One of the pilots on the video was heard to say, oh my gosh, dude. This was an F-18 Super Hornet military jet, and its encounter in 2015 with this unusual object along the East Coast. The oval-shaped aircraft zipped around with befuddling speed. Another pilot was heard to say, wow, what is that, man? Look at that flying. This 35-second video was released by the privately owned media and scientific research company to the STARS Academy of Arts and Science. It's the latest to suggest the existence of hovering egg-shaped vessels, since the Pentagon in December publicly acknowledged a program dedicated to the study of unidentified flying objects. And while the Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program, or ATIP, ostensibly ran from 27 to 2012, those familiar with it say efforts are still being made to further learn about these objects. Well, my guest on this episode has been, like many of us, saying, oh my gosh, dude, what is that thing, for a good number of years. And together, we're going to take the temperature of modern ufology as a field of study. How is it doing? Where is it headed? He's also going to offer up some of his own ideas as to what might be behind the UFO ET phenomenon. Greg Bishop has been interested in facts that don't fit from an early age. In 1991, Greg co-founded a magazine called The Excluded Middle, which was a journal of UFOs, conspiracy research, psychedelia, and new science. Wake Up Down There, which anthologized many of the articles and features, was published in 2000. Greg's second book was Project Beta, the story of Paul Benowitz, National Security and the Creation of a Modern UFO Myth, which documented a government campaign of disinformation perpetrated against an unsuspecting U.S. citizen. Weird California, a portrait of strange and eerie history and places in the Golden State, was published in 2006. And from December 2007 to November 2011, Greg blogged for the UFO and paranormal site UFOmystic. His current book, It Defies Language, is a collection of essays detailing his long involvement with the UFO subject, government insiders, and theories and opinions about what is behind this phenomenon. And for 2 years, Greg hosted The Hungry Ghost, an interview and music show airing on pirate FM station KBLT in Los Angeles. His current interviews with UFO and paranormal researchers and personalities can be heard at RadioMysterioso.com. Greg Bishop, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm doing great, Richard. How are you?
Very well. I was mentioning in the introduction that you're a fine writer, researcher, and your other job, of course, is one of the fine webmasters at Coast to Coast AM. So occasionally we get to work together on Coast. How did that come about for you?
One of my friends, Tim Benall, told me about a job. I interviewed for it, and it turned out that I don't know. I guess I was the kind of person they wanted because I'm interested in the subject matter. I can write a complete sentence with proper grammar and spelling.
That helps, yes.
And which is apparently now a marketable skill. And
Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. And available too. I mean, I don't have a set job anymore. Actually, the job came up right after I lost. I got laid off from a job in post-production, which I worked in Hollywood for 25 or more years.
And your interest in all things strange, and particularly in UFOs, which is where we'll go with this interview, when did that begin and how?
It began when I was a child, when we used to go to the library every week. My father said, get two or three books and we'll come back next week. It turned out I went through all the paranormal, UFO, and cryptozoology and ghost books in one library. Took me a couple years. Then I went to another library and finished off all the ones that weren't at the first library. I don't know why I did that. I don't know. You know, I've talked to researchers and said, well, maybe you got something in your background. We should do a regression. And I was like, no. I don't think any of that stuff happened. But yeah, I have since seen things, you know, a couple of times, but I don't know where the interest came from. I think, and part of it is just my, you know, nature of me being interested in things that are not scheduled for most people, or that is the weird stuff thumbs its nose at the reality most people think they live in, and that makes me happy.
Right, but you are, I mean, you're more than obviously taking a casual interest in this. I mean, you dive pretty deep into this. How would you characterize the current state of ufology?
In transition, I think, which is strange. I would never could have guessed I'd be saying that even a year ago. And it's all because, obviously, because of the New York Times article and To the Stars and all that. It's thrown a huge wrench into ufology. And it's caused a lot of people to get very excited and saying, this is what's coming. This is what we've been waiting for. And a lot of other people that are saying, well, hold on a second here. Somebody's telling us, somebody who we never believed before is now telling us everything we want to hear. And I kind of agree with that. It means you should be a lot more suspicious than be a lot more accepting.
Right. Someone who has been involved in covert operations in Central America is telling us all of this. So you're right. I mean, we need to look at this with some healthy skepticism. Although some are calling this essentially disclosure. What do you think?
I don't think it's disclosure. I think it's telling people what they want to hear. That to me is not disclosure. I think if there was kind of some kind of quote unquote disclosure, I think that term's been co-opted too much. But if there were some kind of disclosure, it would be something that it would take us a while to get our minds around. And we wouldn't even recognize it as such, if that makes any sense.
Well, at the very least, it is a de facto admission, finally, that the U.S. government, branches of the U.S. government, are interested in, know about, are studying the UFO reality. That's pretty close to disclosure.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that UFO researchers knew this all along.
Yes.
But I think the point is that they can, you know, go to their friends and say, see, we were right. They were interested in it. But, you know, it's only gone halfway now. It's not even gone halfway. It's just kind of an admission they're interested in some videos of things that are indistinct. I mean, I guess they're strange, but it's not like, you know, supposedly the Holloman film of something landing and things getting out and talking to a colonel and all that. I don't know if we're ever going to see that, if it does exist. But It is a step. And I can complain about this all I want and whine and moan and say, you know, why are you believing people now when you didn't believe them, you know, a year ago? But the upshot of a lot of this, which is completely unexpected to me and I like, is that serious people seem to be taking it a little more seriously. That is definitely some fallout from all of this since last December.
The treatment or the tone has certainly changed vis-a-vis the New York Times article. However, it does seem to be following this established pattern where I remember, for example, Edgar Mitchell, I believe he was in England at the time when he was saying UFOs are real. And I've been told, you know, by people in the military, there was a big splash and then it all went away. And we're seeing this again with this New York Times story. Very little in the way of follow up.
Well, there was a little bit of follow up. There was one more release along with an opinion piece by Chris Mellon in the Washington Post, I guess 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And they're trying to keep the pressure on. But I don't know what the end game for this is. You can believe the To the Stars people and say the end game is that we're going to use this technology to benefit mankind, which I seriously doubt. If you have advanced technology, usually it benefits the people that have the most money and power, obviously. And the second part of revealing what the real story is about the UFO subject to everybody, this is just one group's view. I don't happen to agree with their view. I think it's far stranger than aliens coming here from other planets. I think it involves us very heavily, and we don't recognize that, meaning we put our spin on something that is incomprehensible to us normally, so we have to make sense of it. So we make sense of it in a way that makes sense to us. And I'm not sure if that's exactly what it is, if you see what I'm getting at.
Right. I mean, you have, I believe it was in your book, It Defies Language, Essays on UFOs and Other Weirdness.
Yeah.
You talk about how most of the current search for answers about UFOs are misguided and antiquated. What did you mean by that?
What I mean is I think it's high time that people stopped taking down reports and putting them in databases and then looking, going out and looking for more reports and putting them in databases and doing something like asking, and this is what I think is the most important question you could ask if you're into this, is what causes UFO reports? Reports, not where UFOs come from, not who's flying them, none of those things. What causes the report? That brings up so many other questions. You know, why did somebody report it? What did they see? What was the nature of what they saw? Did anybody else see it? Has anybody else seen something like this? What, you know, were there other witnesses? What does the human mind do when it's faced with something that's completely out of its normal waking consciousness and normal experience? A lot of questions come up when you ask that question. I don't think that question's being asked. People are concentrating basically on the small picture of where, you know, what are people reporting, and not on the bigger picture of why they're reporting it and what is the source of what they're reporting. I don't know if it's things coming from other planets. I'm pretty sure it's not, you know, it's not our consciousness. I'm pretty sure it's at least some of the reports have to do with something that isn't human. But I think if I put a name on it, or people put a name on it, or a model of it, that's what you look for. And that may not be what it is. It's like looking in a mirror. Something I said in the book, I said, is the UFO subject, you know, whatever is associated with UFOs, if we start looking too closely, does it just hold up a mirror to us? I think these are questions that need to be asked, looked at, and teased apart.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real. and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
I was speaking with Preston Dennett the other night and on my terrestrial, my weekly terrestrial radio show, and he's going to join me on Coast to Coast shortly. Actually, by the time this podcast airs, he will have been on with me, but he has a new book out about USOs, unidentified submersible objects. Now, you're right there on the West Coast, and he tells me that, you know, it's become a thing. People go down to the beach, and they watch these strange lights coming up out of the water somewhere, I guess, between San Clemente and around Catalina Island and up to Santa Barbara. Is this a thing, and have you done it? Have you gone down to the beach? Have you seen strange lights coming out of the water?
I didn't even not know about this till Preston told me about it. Because he's talked to people, and he's actually talked to groups of people that go out and sit, like you said, sit there and look for these things. Now I want to go out and do it. Strangely enough, I had him on my show recently, and I just finished editing. I'm just about to post his interview, but we didn't talk about the USOs so much as talk about what we just talked about. He's very much into the extraterrestrial hypothesis, thinks it's the best answer. I'm not so sure, so we had kind of a back and forth about that. But now you've got me interested to go out there and find out from Preston where these – I guess there's a group of people in Catalina that do this. There's people along the coast that do this. And it's apparently so common that it's like going to Area 51 in the early 90s. You're almost guaranteed to see something, which is strange. That's amazing. What I'd like to do is actually go up in an airplane and fly over these areas and see what we can see from the air.
Right. And there was, of course, a much celebrated episode of The Low Files with actor Rob Lowe with his two grown sons in tow. And they, I guess, chartered some sort of a vessel off the coast of Malibu in search of this underwater base, which our colleague Jimmy Church, I guess, has spotted on one of the Google Earth maps. What do you think is down there?
I've looked at that. The first time I saw it, I said, huh, that looks interesting. And then I realized that it is just – until we have a clear picture of what's going on there, it's just something that looks strange on Google Earth. They don't have clear pictures of what's underwater. They just have sort of a rough estimate of what – I think of what the topography underwater looks like. So until we find out if there's really something there, I'm not so sure. Although they have been – stories about submarine tunnels going from the coast far, far inland, like maybe even into Nevada and Area 51. I've heard stories like that. And also, you know, California has a very deep and long history of UFO reports going back to mission times in the 18th century. So it's always been a place of strangeness, which I wrote about in Weird California, come to think of it.
yes. The whole idea of these craft coming up out of the water, perhaps from some underground base. We have, of course, Michael Sala writing about the hidden history of the Antarctic and Nazis with alien technology and so forth, which leaves us where in terms of what these things might be. Does that mean that extraterrestrial is now off the docket? We're talking about something or someone who has always been here. They're right under our feet, literally.
Yeah, well, that was the idea of my late friend Mac Tonies, who wrote a book called The Crypto-Terrestrials, in which he proposed that there has been some – and, you know, this was a thought experiment for him. He didn't 100% believe this. I don't either. I don't 100% believe anything in this weird – with all this weird stuff. You have to keep your mind open. But his idea was that there was some race that had been here as long as we had, or maybe longer – and had developed, you know, parallel to us and then into a different direction, and was basically hiding from us now because they don't want anything to do with us. And to me, that's a good, viable theory. I don't really know how you test it. Actually, I don't really know how you test any of these things with regards to UFOs. There's no way to prove any of these things without having some way of showing everybody that wants to the same thing. And you can't do that with UFOs. That's what makes it so fascinating.
And that's what keeps us employed. It's built in job security. These things ultimately will never be resolved.
That's why you have to keep a completely open mind. I do not have a 100% view of anything in this field. I'm interested in many things, but I don't have a theory that I hold close to me saying this is my favorite theory and this is what it is. There's good parts of all these theories, but if you stick to one of them, you find lots of pieces of your cherished theory start falling apart under scrutiny.
Mm. I want to dial back. This is a book I think you wrote more than 10, maybe 12 years ago, Project Beta. For those who don't know the story of Paul Benowitz, just sort of summarize what happened to him.
Paul Benowitz was an electrical physicist. He had his own company called Thunder Scientific, which still exists. He lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico in the 1970s, 80s. Sometime in the late 70s, he saw weird lights moving around an Air Force base there, Kirtland. And he was a UFO enthusiast, too, so he decided he would tell the Air Force that he was seeing all these weird lights and to let them know that there were UFOs flying around the Air Force base. Apparently, these lights were not UFOs, at least most of them. But they were very interested to know what he knew, because he lived right next to the base, and he could see these things. He was filming them, actually, with an 8mm camera, taking pictures of them. Probably they had something to do with unmanned aerial vehicles, which was something nobody really talked about in the late 70s, early 80s. So they took him. He came to the base, gave him a report. They realized that he was looking at things he probably shouldn't be, and they wanted to know what he was looking at, how he knew what he knew, how he was figuring out electronic transmissions that were coded. But he was an electronics whiz, so he could do this. And this was in the late 70s when it's a lot harder for anybody to do any of this stuff. They said, "Paul, this is very interesting. Please keep us updated. We considered you to be working with us now." They just wanted his confidence so they could find out who he was, what he was seeing, who he was talking to, more importantly, and at some certain point how to control his perceptions so it didn't get too close to some of these defense projects that were going on in Kirtland at the time, and still do, I believe. But the problem with Paul Benowitz was that he was so into the UFO subject and so not willing to listen to somebody saying, "Well, maybe you better step back for a minute, Paul, here and consider that maybe some of this stuff is not really provable." It was a bad mix. Eventually, he ended up in a mental health facility, as his family put him there for a couple of months, just because he was so paranoid and so out of whack and so disturbed that they couldn't see any other way. But the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, other people that were watching him, talking to him, they didn't particularly care about his state of mind as long as it kept him away from certain projects. And it's a very sorrowful case in the annals of ufology. But when I wrote the book, I wanted to try to get to the bottom of that, since I knew some of the principles in the story.
Right, but the idea that they were running the U.S. Air Force, that is, running a psychological profile and disinformation campaign on Benowitz. Obviously, they were trying to keep him away from certain classified secrets and finding out too much, but were they also sort of using this as an incubator to use on the general population with regards to ufology?
I don't think they were thinking that far ahead. All they were thinking about was Paul Benowitz and people like him. And I don't even know if they ran a psychological profile. They just sort of tried to keep him at bay and keep tabs on him. The one real disturbing thing that I heard from a couple of people I talked to was that he had injection marks on his arms. Very disturbing time. And you could say, well, maybe he's doing it to himself. I'm not sure if that's the case. And I asked a couple people, different people inside and outside the government, if they saw these things. They said, yes, he did have injection marks on his arm, and we didn't know where they came from. He said that aliens were coming in to his house at night and injecting him with chemicals and making him do things like drive off in the middle of the night and do things. That sounds like psychological warfare or control to me. That really bothers me. That's the deepest, darkest part of the story. Most of the rest of it had to do with just him making huge leaps of logic based on just a little bit of information.
Right. There's a term for that when they replace, they create a memory in order to cover for something else. What is that? A slider? Is that what they call a slider?
I guess so. Manchurian candidate. I don't know what you want to call it, but yeah, right. I understand the concept.
Well, I'm wondering if that may hold some clue to the greater idea of the alien abduction phenomenon and whether these are implanted memories. What are your, care to speculate on that?
Yeah, well, there's a whole segment of the research community, and there has been since the 90s, concerned with something called military abductions, MILABs, M-I-L-A-B. And their idea is that abductions are, at least as far as I can remember, are completely caused by some sort of MK-Ultra type experiment or program running to get people to believe certain things in a certain way. I'm not so sure if that's 100% of what's going on, but I would not say that it's out of the realm of possibility. And a lot of people talked about it, and a few people have presented information on this, especially late 80s, early 90s, through the 90s about this. It's kind of died out now. Melinda Leslie used to be the point person on this, and I think she still is.
Well, speaking of implanted memories and mind control, wouldn't it be great to implant good behavior in our dogs? They can be real rascals. But seriously, wouldn't you like to develop your dog's hidden intelligence and eliminate bad behavior and create the obedient, well-behaved pet of your dreams? A woman named Adrienne Ferricelli, a professional certified dog trainer, has helped hundreds of dog owners train their dogs to be well-behaved, obedient, loving pets by bringing out their hidden intelligence. You can quickly eliminate any behavior problem your dog has, no matter how badly you think it's ingrained, no matter what kind of dog you have. The science behind this is simple. You may have heard of neuroplasticity in the human brain. That's what allows our brains to learn new behaviors. Well, your dog's brain has this same plasticity. With the right mental stimulation that Adrienne teaches, any dog's brain will become more open and receptive to learning new information. Your dog will listen to you and understand what you want it to do. When this happens, bad behaviors simply fade away as more desirable ones appear in their place. So, if you want to check out this remarkable dog training system, just visit realbusinessbargains.com. Realbusinessbargains.com. That's realbusinessbargains.com.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? No, me either. But I guess he better say it because of Richard. You know, he's all wrapped up in this stuff. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio. A 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again. And Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. And we give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. And cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists. So go check out the Everytown podcast, because Everytown, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Author Greg Bishop is here, and we're talking about the state of ufology.
How do you feel about the whole recovered memory, hypnotic regressions, and this sort of work that people like David Jacobs and others have used in this arena of alien abductions? How do you feel about it?
I think it's inaccurate and possibly dangerous. Because when you're in a hypnotic state, you're very susceptible to suggestion. I am not a hypnotist. I'm not a professional hypnotist. I've read up on the literature. I've talked to people on both sides of the issue. And there was a moratorium, actually, among British researchers in the 90s, I believe, about using hypnosis in abduction research. And they kept getting stories, but sometimes I think even stranger ones that didn't fit the narrative. And that's another thing. If the hypnotist has a certain thing they're looking for, that's what they're going to – no matter how much they say they're going to be asking open-ended questions, I think they have – no matter what they say, they have an agenda about what they are researching and what their point of view is. And the people that come to them tend to come out with the story, the kind of stories that researcher is interested in. So I don't think it's an accurate or maybe even a safe thing to do with people that have had these kind of experiences, to subject them to hypnosis by a UFO researcher, possibly a mental health professional, since they may not have a bias in any direction, and see what happens with that. But I think it's probably not a good tool for the abduction researcher. That is my opinion.
Right.
Peter Robbins, who worked with Bud Hopkins for years, we've had discussions about this, and the only conclusion we came to is, if I'd worked with Bud Hopkins for 20 or 25 years, I might feel like Peter does.
Right, right. What about the work of John Mack, then, in this regard?
I think Mack was a little bit more careful, and I have a bit more respect for the work he did. I actually talked to him a little bit while he was still alive, about some of his research, and he seemed to be take the hypnosis part as just one tool. And I don't think he jumped to too many conclusions. Actually, the thing I liked about Mack, and nobody has done this until recently, is I think he was more interested in the witness and helping the witness deal with a traumatic experience rather than creating a research project where he was saying, aliens were hybridizing with humans and all that. He was more interested in the witness and their state of mind and how he could help them. And that I can respect.
Right. Well, the hybrid, that's become a favorite topic at UFO conferences, alien hybrids and time travelers to Mars and so forth. How much damage do you think that some of these conferences do with the types of speakers that are really, well, to say that they're getting out over their skis is to put it mildly. But what do you make of what's going on in even with MUFON? I mean, I understand the need to sell tickets and so forth. What is your take on that?
With regards to large UFO groups, for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, actually longer. I gave a speech in 2008 or 2007, I think it was, in New Mexico, where I said, get rid of the big UFO groups, and people walked out of the talk. And I said, my suggestion is that a top-down approach to the UFO problem issue is probably not going to get you very far, because the phenomenon is not top-down, it's bottom-up. If you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. The witnesses have a lot of things to say, and there's people that run these organizations that say, we're going to look at it in this way. So they ignore vast amounts of data and witness testimony because it doesn't fit in with whatever that organization is looking for. Also, it's probably more useful to get a small group involved who have a very specific goal in mind, and to do that research quietly outside of the realm of a big group, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 people with a very specific research goal in mind. And when they finish it, document everything very carefully, publish it online, and then break up and go do something else, maybe another research project. I think that's a way to – I've got this idea, mimic the obliqueness of the subject. The UFO thing is so strange and so squirrely. I think the only way to get a handle on it is to be a little less organized in the way that we have been, if that makes sense.
It does. I guess I was speaking more to the idea of outlandish claims. And you mentioned data.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
talking about there's a total absence of evidence, a total absence of data. Just somebody says, well, I was abducted by aliens and I was taken to Venus. And they will build a conference around these types of people.
Oh, well, because people like good stories. I mean, that's always how it's been. Unfortunately, that's not how you gain any. That is creating a mythology and kind of a carnival atmosphere, which has actually been with ufology since the beginning, off, you know, to various degrees. The serious people that take this seriously generally don't have huge conferences or have all these speakers. They kind of quietly do their research, compare notes with other people, and, you know, maybe we'll be on interview shows or whatever to share some of their research. You have to get people, you know, you have to get people sitting in conferences and paying the tickets and all that, but there's got to be a medium in there. I think the International UFO Congress that Alejandro Rojas puts on, no matter what you think of it, he does make an effort to have dissenting views in there. There may be two or three researchers only. I mean, he's going to have the mainstream speakers and maybe a few people you don't agree with, but he has made an effort to put speakers in that almost nobody agrees with, or that are going to upset some people, and I think that's brave, and that should happen more.
Talk to me about your thoughts on, to borrow a phrase from Richard Dolan, the breakaway civilization, that. If there is, let's say, a back-engineered alien technology, if that's what we're dealing with, they have it, they're using it, they're not going to give it up. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it'd be very, very easy to cover something like that up, so it's quite possible. But I don't know if I've looked into it enough to see that there's enough evidence that such a thing is going on. It would be very easy. I mean, of course, the military and the intelligence community uses that kind of technology. We never hear about it. So it'd be very easy for some kind of a civilization to do that too, as long as they had the cooperation of some part of the government, at least the one that keeps track of things in space and what's going up into space. As for, you know, terrestrial base, I'm not so sure. I don't see enough evidence for it to make me 100% sure that there is some sort of breakaway civilization existing. And yes, whole conferences has been built around this idea. Actually, my friend of mine, Walter Bosley, presents at these things, and we've had a few discussions about it. He's very invested in that, thinking there is some sort of breakaway civilization or civilizations existing right now on this planet.
Much of that sort of hangs on some quotes, which may be apocryphal. There may be some truth to them, attributed to Ben Rich of Skunk Works. You know, we have things out in the hangar in the desert that are 50 years beyond your wildest imagination.
Right.
If you've seen it on Star Trek or Star Wars, we've been there, done that.
Right.
What do you think?
Send E.T. home. That
yes,
thing.
Yes. What do you make of Ben Rich and these quotes? Have you investigated? Is there any truth to them? Did he say them?
The send E.T. home thing, I'm pretty sure he did say. It's been cited in multiple places. I can't remember the original citation. And it was cited, I believe, in at least one major media outlet at the time, or at least very soon afterwards. And, you know, what I make of it is what I made when I first heard this, and when I was more prone to believe more things than I do now wholeheartedly. I've kind of backed off of a lot of things and taken this kind of agnostic view. But at the time, when I first heard that quote, it was fascinating to me because, one, I was heavily involved with writing Project Beta at the time, or just about to. And the other thing was, as I was writing that, I realized that in many cases, the military and the technology that is available to the military is 5, 10, 15, 20 years ahead of where we think it is. I'll give you one example. I talked about something called adaptive optics in Project Beta. Adaptive optics is a way to artificially steady an image. Like when you see stars twinkle, that's the atmosphere, the air bending the light from the stars, and it just makes it fuzzy. There was a technology invented in the 70s, late 70s, which is one of the things I think that they didn't want Paul Benowitz to know about, that could look at stars or satellites, because that's what we're interested in, and to artificially sharpen those images up. Actually, they used a mirror that would actually be it was a bendable mirror in a telescope. A fascinating thing. That was in the late 70s. Sometime in the mid to late 90s, they let that technology out for astronomers. And to them, it was, you know, this brand new wonderful thing. But it had been commonplace in the intelligence community for almost 20 years. And that's just one example. So I think they are ahead of us, you know, definitely ahead of where we think they are. They have to be because, you know, if you've got some technology, you don't want the other, you know, another government to know about. Of course, you're going to keep it under wraps. Of course, you're going to cause rumors to be spread about it. So you can see who knows what. There's another part of this. And I think somebody like Ben Rich is savvy. He would also engage in a little bit of, you know, bragging and saying things just to see what people would say and to worry the adversary or their companies or whatever. Maybe they did have technology that could send ET home. Maybe they do. Until it's revealed to everybody, we really don't know, though, do we?
Well, what do you make of the claims of Gary Evans in the UK, who hacked into the Pentagon computers and discovered evidence of, you know, deep space platforms and and all the like. What do you make of that?
It means that there's a secret space program, probably, but how far that goes past the military, I do not know. It was Gary McKinnon.
Gary McKinnon, my apologies. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some of that stuff exists, but I don't know how much he found out about how far that would go past the military. Now, a secret space program certainly won't exist. A breakaway civilization, I don't have enough evidence in front of me yet to say that there's some sort of existing breakaway civilization that has access to technology that we do not. Maybe it turns into the crypto-terrestrial thing where there is a civilization, but it didn't break away. It was broken away long, long, long time ago before recorded history. And maybe that's what we're seeing evidence of when people say they have evidence of a breakaway civilization. Maybe it's a completely different one.
You mentioned that somewhere along your journey, you became more of an agnostic. Can you pinpoint when that was and why you became more of an agnostic with regards to ufology?
I can't really pinpoint it. It was probably a concatenation of just hearing story after story after story after story and not being able to check up on it. No way of being able to check up on it and being annoyed with people who believe things that you couldn't check up on. So as kind of almost to protect myself psychologically, and also, you know, you can't really look at the subject matter without having a sense of agnosticism, meaning a true skeptic, meaning I will consider everything, but I will not make a decision until I have overwhelming evidence, at least for me, that I will say that something is fact. Almost none of that is provided with the UFO and the UFO subject, because you almost can't. So the only sane attitude I think to take is to say, look, I'm interested in anything that seems to have merit, but I am not going to wholeheartedly believe in any of it. Because as soon as you do, you've shut the door on your discernment, on a mind that will, you know, be able to change your opinion, change its opinion when new information becomes available. And there's always new information available if you look for it.
In terms of alternative information, when you're not delving into this arena, ufology, where else do you like to go?
It's so weird because on my show I've had probably 90% UFO people and researchers and talk, but I've also had cryptid people on. I've talked to Nick Redfern a couple of times, who delves into all these things. I've had ghost people on, ghost hunters, and recently I actually was in last year I was in Nova Scotia with my friend Paul Kimball, and I went on a ghost hunt with him because he has a show called Haunted right now on Eastlink, which I guess is a maritime Canadian maritime TV network. Anyway, we went to a museum, and I actually for the first time had experience of things that I couldn't explain, like
cold spots.
Wow. Yeah, cold spots. I had a strange tingling go from the back of my skull all the way down my back of my legs and out my heels when somebody said I just felt something go by me. And I'm in there not saying I'm just going to accept what happens. I'm not going to be scared. I'm not going to be excited. I just want to experience. And I did experience some very strange things, like the two things I just mentioned. We also had something called a REM pod, which I guess detects electromagnetic fields, changes in temperature, changes in pressure. And it started sending messages to us after we said, you know, one for yes, two for no. I don't think anybody was messing with me. And we were getting answers apparently from my friend who I've just talked about during this show, Mac Tonies. He's also Paul Kimball's friend. And I think at a very basic level, a lot of this stuff is connected. And I think the connecting link is us. It's our mind. It's human consciousness.
Still an agnostic?
About that? I don't know. You know, I believe that there is weird stuff that happens where people say something is haunted. I don't know if it's dead people. I have no idea. I think it might have something to do with the afterlife, but I'm not sure yet. When you're talking about some of these paranormal things, I'm very loath to put a model on it. Because if I've got a model, then everything has to stick to that model. I go back to saying, you know, having a theory. I had my friend Susan Demeter St. Clair from Toronto, actually, on my show a couple times. And she said she was tired of what she called the DPH, dead people hypothesis, with regards to ghost hunting and the paranormal and things like that. There's a lot more going on there than dead people. And I think that a lot of people that are into that that community are very focused, like people are on the extraterrestrial hypothesis, on the dead person hypothesis, and I don't think it accounts for all of the phenomena that happens.
How do we listen to Mysterioso?
Radio Mysterioso is on usually Sundays live at from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and you just have to go to radiomysterioso.com. And there's a large backlog of shows going back years. I think I've got a couple hundred on there. So if you want to binge listen, you're perfectly welcome to.
Well, Greg, until we work again on Coast to Coast, and you're going to be dropping by in this fair city of Toronto in a couple of months, I look forward to meeting you then and working with you again on Coast. And thank you for dropping by Conspiracy Unlimited.
Thanks so much for having me on, Richard.
My pleasure. Well, it's almost time for me to dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs. But before I do that, I want to tell you what's coming up on
episode 55 of Conspiracy Unlimited. First, I want to remind you that if you want to get in on the weekly draw and a chance to win one of my Strange Planet CDs, it's real simple. Here's what you need to do. Just rate and review this podcast. Grab a screenshot and email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. Richard Serrett, SYRE, @gmail.com. Don't forget to include your full name and mailing address, then be listening every Friday for your name and your chance to win. I've been talking to you about Life Extension's Mega Green Tea Extract and how it provides powerful antioxidant effects throughout the body. And that's because green tea contains health-promoting polyphenols, including a powerful antioxidant, which has been the subject of extensive scientific research. So why not pour on these multiple health benefits for yourself? Green tea is a powerful antioxidant. It supports cell membrane integrity, boosts liver detoxification, enhances immune function, and helps maintain healthy blood cholesterol, LDL and triglyceride levels, and much more. Life Extension's Mega Green Tea Extract is decaffeinated, yet it contains more polyphenols in one capsule than 7 cups of green tea. The Chinese have used green tea for therapeutic purposes since 2000 BC. More recently, volumes of published scientific findings attest to its multiple health benefits. One capsule a day of Mega Green Tea Extract is all you need. Why don't you give your body what it needs? Order right now from Life Extension and save 25%. Just go to smartclickidea.com. That's smartclickidea.com. SmartClickIdea.com. Coming up on episode 55, a practicing magician as well as a dedicated occultist and founding member of the London, Ontario Pagan Temple discusses Aleister Crowley and explains ceremonial and practical magic. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.